And welcome everyone to another edition of the John Kirkland Show. I'm your host, John Kirkland. Tonight, we're going to switch it up a little bit, aka this morning. We're going to switch it up a little bit. Number one, I want to give a shout out to my boy, Sante Holland, for giving me this idea. And we had a conversation last night, and he reached out to me. He was talking about how, hey, John, does your listeners, your viewers, whatever platform you're on, do they know you? Do they know who they're talking to? You know, you talk about sports, but I feel like they need to know you. They need to know who John Kirkland really is and what he's about and, you know, just so on and so forth. Just so many different things we talked about. We talked about creativity. Mind you, ladies and gentlemen, shout out to Sante Holland, man, one of the greatest underground artist I know personally. That's a personal friend of mine. He's also my brother at the end of the day, but his talent is wicked. But at the end of the day, he gave me an inspiration, an idea, so I'm going to take it to another level, and I'm going to give the people what they want to hear, which is my journey and who I am and why they call me John Kirkland, the hardest man working, and why my lifestyle is the way it is, you know, when I have different slogans, when I say I went from rags to riches, you know, just different things like that. Or if I'm in a fraternity where people talk about, you know, being about billions and things like that, it's just my lifestyle and how hard I had to work for certain things. The first thing I'm going to get into is, I realize that I'm a leader. I realize that I am an example for certain people, if not all people, or if not, you know, a lot of young men across the world or whoever's listening to this. I understand how hard it is to be a black man. I understand how hard it is to get an opportunity to do something or be anything in life as it is, just because of the perception of the color of our skin. However, I look to the possibilities of what we've already seen in our country and what we've seen already exist. In terms of when you look at, somebody asked me, let me just say this. Somebody asked me about a year ago. They said, John, who is the top five in your life? Who's the top five most influential people in the world? Period. Hands down. There's not another thought about it. And I said, okay, if that's what you want, that's what I'll give you. And the number one person that I said, and I kind of did it in a reorder. I posted a list on social media, but this is my final list as of right now, and we're in 2021. Number one, no doubt about it, hands down, you can ask me tomorrow, you can ask me tonight, you can ask me next week, next month, next year, you can ask me in a coma. My Uncle Royce, Royce Kirkland. What can I say about the guy, man? Made me who I am today. This is a guy who made me understand that sometimes when you're on a loaded team that's stacked, wait till your name is called, but always prepare yourself as if your name is going to be called. A man taught me how to cook for my family, taught me how to be everything I am today. I idolize him. I want to be everything just like him. That's my uncle. I love him to pieces, man. And I talk just like him, you know, at times, even when I'm talking to my son, whether it be taking out the trash or something, it's like, you know, I find myself taking slogans, you know, away from what he does. So shout out to Uncle Royce, man, number one. Number two, I would say, no doubt about it, a childhood athlete that I grew up on, who I think is the best athlete in terms of hoop I've ever seen in my life, is Michael Jordan at number two. No doubt about it. Number two, Michael Jordan, man. When I was growing up, he made the game look easy. It was crazy. When you talk about boxing, you have to talk about Floyd Mayweather at number three. Oh my God, this dude is like crazy. He changed the sport. He didn't just dominate the sport, but he changed the sport. He changed the way that you fight, and he changed the way, you know, people did business. So you got to give love to Floyd Mayweather. At number four, Barack Obama. Barack Obama made history. The first black president ever. And had 8 great years. Not just 4, but 8. And shout out to Barack Obama. Because if this man can enter office, we can do anything that's possible, no matter what is going on in our society. At number 4. Number 5. I know some people are going to disagree with me. They're going to say, oh man, what about this guy? What about that guy? What about this? The last guy, and remind you, let me remind people before I give you guys my number 5. Influential. Not the best athlete, not the best speaker, not the best president, none of that. We're talking about the most influential people in my life, or that I feel that I vibe from in terms of confidence. And at number 5 is going to be Ray Lewis. There's no linebacker on earth that played the game the way this man played. Crazy. It's mad crazy. And when you put all those people together, it's scary, the outcome. Personality, confidence, hard work, dedication, you name it, there it is. And so that was what influences me. But at the same time, another question was presented to me. John, my question to you is, what is your purpose on earth? Like, for example, how many of my listeners tonight, and this is the part one of the John Kirkland, journey. How many people wake up every day and they say, you know what? What is my purpose? What is my purpose in life? What do I do for the American people? What do I do for my peers? And like for me personally, my calling is to motivate my peers. My calling is to make everyone around me better. And what does that say about you? It makes me a leader. That's what I'm about. Like for me, I don't care about gratitude. I don't care about respect. I care about, if you're in my camp, I want you to make it. And I want you to be the best at whatever it is that you do, whether it be computers, fighting, basketball, rap, working on cars, a chef. I have a camp. And so I got one of my boys, he's a chef. One of my boys is a music artist. One of my boys is an insurance guy. One of my boys is a lawyer, truck driver, you name it. And another guy's in insurance. I mean, the list goes on. I have a little bit of everything, professional basketball, whatever, we got it. So at the end of the day, it's like, I have no room to be jealous. Like, you embrace the company that you surround. Never hate. You don't have to, because there was a commercial that came out years ago that said, we're all going to go pro in something other than sports. And I believe that. I feel like I went pro in work ethic. I don't believe nobody on God's green earth work harder than me right now, especially in corporate America. Nobody. Period. And I've been doing this for a long time. And my boy, hey, shout out to Sante Holland. My boy tells me all the time, hey, this is John Kirkland, the hardest man working. Every time he talks to me, not out of like, you trying to promote your boy, but in a sense of, I respect what this man does every single day. And it's not something I gotta wake up and do every single day. I can do what I wanna do. But I'm trying to be my own boss. But I look up to different people like Damon Dash. And a lot of people don't like Damon Dash because they say, oh man, he's arrogant. No, Damon Dash is a boss. Damon Dash is a businessman. He said, and if anybody takes anything out of context, you're a fool. If you listen to what he said on The Breakfast Club, it makes perfect sense Because if you look at society, that's exactly what we're living in, right? So he said, you're not a boss until you put your own money into it. You're not a boss until you have cash flow. A lot of people say, oh, I'm a boss. No, you're not a boss. Because like I told Sante, I own my own company. I'm my own brand. I'm my own man. If I want to get up and work, it's because, hey, I decided to do a situation where I'm taking the money I earn as capital. I'm not using banks. I'm using capital to fund my company. That's a boss. I don't need loans. I don't need the banks. The banks need me, meaning they need my money to go into their banks to draw interest off my money. Difference. I don't need the credit cards. They need my money, my credit line. I don't need their credit line. Why? Because it's overpriced. I like cash. It gets the job done faster. That's just me. But these are the things I'm learning on my journey, which is what I'm sharing with you. The first thing is first. Now, some of you may be wondering, I know John at one particular time, he was a single father. Now, being a single father is very tough. It's hard. It's not about living up to the title. It's also about listening to the criticism. I've endured that 100%. But when I look back on it, I look at it as a maturity motivation standpoint, in the sense of saying, hey, I could be anything I want to be regardless of what this woman going out saying behind my back in the streets. Because I understood where her mentality was. And I always told her, I remember being in a car with her one day, and I said, you know what? I'm going to have the tattoos, chains, I'm going to have the money, I'm going to be the boss, I'm going to be the king, everybody that you know, looks up to me. So here I am, I'm that guy. And I'm not here to bash anybody. This is my journey, this is my life, this is my existence. I live on resilience. I hate it when it's the easiest, but I love it when it's the toughest. And that's what life is all about. Because you don't know yourself until you go through something that people feel is impossible for you to get through. You don't know. You don't even know you, let alone an opinion made about you. So being a single father is very tough. And I feel like the young ladies out there don't understand that, especially being a young black man trying to make it. It's hard. For sure. Because you're beating the odds. Here's the thing. It's not like you wake up every day and you say, well, I'm applying for a job. No. You're applying for a job with criticism, hate, deception. All those things tie in until they realize that, hey, I'm a young brother from Oakland. I'm a young brother from the projects. I'm a young brother trying to make it. But guess what? I'm going to battle every day until I get my shot to prove to you that I'm not just another black man trying to make it, but I am the guy for the job, and that your perception of me was 100% wrong. I live for that. I strive for that. That's my purpose in life, and that's my message to anybody who even surrounds herself, around me, that believes in everything that I say. It's a natural confidence for the young black man and the black woman also. Being a single dad was very tough. I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know how I was going to feed my daughter. I didn't know any of that. All I know was she was 1 year old. I walked away from basketball. I walked away from Los Angeles. I walked away from everything to come home and be a father to my daughter. Mind you, I'm sleeping on the floor. No job, no nothing. I applied at Apple. Got the job at Apple, technician. I meet my boy, Sante Holland. Shout out to my boy, Tay Holland, man. Still my brother today. I met him about 5 or 6 years ago. maybe 7 years ago, and he had my back from the jump, not even know me from a can of paint, and that's real brothers though. And for us to like be brothers, like at the end of the day, our relationship now is even crazier now, because it's like, man, it's like real conversation, real advice, and we push each other hard. Like I push him to be the best artist, musical artist he can be, and he pushes me to be the best leader I can be, you know, not just for my children and not just for the example, but also for him too, because, you know, he leans on me like I lean on him. So it's crazy that way. But again, being a single dad is tough. And I know what all the dads out there, like, they deal with so much criticism. Oh, he ain't shit. Oh, he's not this. He's not that. He's not. I get it. But you know what? Our energy cannot be towards trying to prove a point that we're nothing, right? Because at some point, it's not going to matter. They're going to say, well, you should have proved that a long time ago. And so for me, I was a young father. I didn't know better. It was crazy because my cousin Nina got married. And it was like May sometime, May 25th, somewhere around there. And I had to go over to my grandparents and borrow some dress clothes, because I didn't have any dress clothes. I had just split up with my daughter's mother at the time. And I kissed my daughter because I knew I wasn't going to see her no more. I knew I was mentally prepared, but realistically I wasn't. So I got to this point where I was like, you know what? I don't care what happens tonight. I'm just going to live my life. Whatever happens tonight, it is what it is. And that's just what it was at that time. And so I went to the wedding and I get me. Anyway, I ended up going out of town outside of Sacramento, like in the middle of the night, hanging out, whatever. And the crazy part was I called for my daughter so I could talk to her, because Autumn was probably close to 1 year old. So I'm trying to call her, talk to her, whatever. And I get on the phone and it's this dude, I won't say his name, but he got on the phone and he started talking crazy to me. Like, he was like, if you ain't trying to be the father, I'm gonna be a father to this little girl. Woo, woo. Now it's crazy because with me being a gangster, like you don't talk to another man about their child and say that. Like, people get put down for that. You understand what I'm talking about? So a lot of people, they get put down for that. And so I was very ignorant towards that, because I felt like, okay, you know what? All right, keep talking to me. Keep talking crazy to me. So we had another conversation. And I said to him, my conversation to him was, I don't want to hear nothing you got to say. Just get ready. And I was prepared at that point in time to fight him. I was ready. And the existence of my maturity kind of just faded away at that particular time. So he shows up with his crew. So mind you, if you can beat somebody up, you're not going to show up with a car full of people, but the car is parked down the street and you got you and your woman trying to take my daughter from me. Mind you, they had already called the police because they was already in violation of my property. So they called the police, and next thing you know, the police told me your child is going to go to foster care or you give up your child to the primary parent. Mind you, I didn't really know much about the law, so on and so forth. I didn't have no attorney. I didn't have anything. So I was lost. I kind of got suckered or whatever. But what I learned from that was a message that my stepfather gave me. So shall a man think and so shall it is. You reap what you sow. And the dude that was against me, in the end, he reaped what he sowed. You don't show up to the next man's house, pillow talk with your girl that you think you like, and then want to try to come invade my situation. That ain't happening. Crazy part is, I moved to LA because I knew I was going to be in some type of trouble, so I moved to LA. And I decided to play basketball because I wanted to channel my energy into basketball. But I also wanted to be around my Uncle Royce. Shout out to my Uncle Royce. I wanted to get more leadership. I wanted to be redefined as a man. And so when I got down there every weekend, I was in his face. I was talking to him, listening to him, so on and so forth. And finally, when I was ready and I felt compelled to go back to Sacramento and battle, I did that. I went back. Here we are. But I will say this to the young men out there, because this is my truth. This is my life. This is what I went through. Never be afraid to walk away. Never be afraid to say, you know what? Let me go back to the drawing board. Because sometimes we do. And the drawing board represents what? It represents a reminder of what we planned to do that we didn't finish or execute. So that's what I understand about myself. That's what I understand about what's going on. And one thing that makes you a millionaire is not how much you make on your check, but it's about what, how much you've mastered your craft. Because being the best doesn't mean skill. It means that you're the greatest of everything that you do, no matter how it plays out. The show is going to always go on. Your best is always going to show. That's what makes you the greatest. I ended up taking a job meeting Sante. And again, as I said previously, Sante had my back, so on and so forth. We've been brothers ever since. And so there was a cart of phones on the cart. And when I picked up the phones on the cart to take it to the belt so people could work on them, I tore my back. The torn muscle on my back. So when I felt the tear and heard the crack, I knew I was done. I was like, it's a wrap. I can't come back. It's a wrap. And so I was on disability for a while. I had my two-year-old. Mind you, I had my two-year-old daughter. Shout out to my daughter, Autumn Kirkland, who rubbed medicine on my back so that I could heal up quickly and all that stuff. I mean, she was like super nurse for me. So shout out to my baby girl. I love her to pieces. I couldn't return back to that job because they felt like I was a liability. So I didn't have no job. So I took these little odd end jobs at the time. In the midst of all that, I was very discouraged. I know Tay Holland wasn't, which is Sante Holland. He wasn't working at Apple anymore. The crew was just gone. It was just disintegrated. So I was staying with my auntie at the time, and I said to my auntie, shout out to my auntie woman, man. They don't even make women like her no more. But it was crazy because I came to her with no excuses. I said, auntie, I can't get a job here. I said, I have to expand my horizons, and I may have to go outside of SAC to get a job. So it ended up being the Bay. So what I ended up doing was, I was, sleeping in the car each shift so I could make it. I was sleeping in motels. It was crazy. The grind was hard, ladies and gentlemen. It was no joke. And I went from sleeping in the car to a raggedy motel to an empty condo in Moraga. So the crazy part was I didn't start my job yet. I had just got a new job working. So I had my daughter. And so I said, you know what? I was telling my daughter's mother at the time, hey, let Autumn come and stay with me for a week. So Autumn came and stayed with me for a week out in Moraga, out in the bay, and with no furniture, barely had food in there. So I probably spent the last of whatever I had to put food in, put food down. Because my goal was to feed my daughter. I didn't care about nothing else. I wanted to make sure my daughter had a bath, had a bed to sleep in, so on and so forth. That's all I cared about. I can go hungry, I can go whatever. And that's what I saved my money for. I had savings, but that's what I gave all my money for. Anyway, so I promised my daughter. I was laying down with my daughter. I promised my daughter. I said, hey, we're not going to live like this forever. Daddy about to, ball out. We about to live like this. And I ended up getting, I was actually in Vegas at the time. I actually got this job working for the city. I got involved in the parking business and life just took off from there. And my boy called me up on the phone, which is Sante. I called him on the, you know, he called me on the phone and I told him, I said, hey man, I got a condo now, man. I went from rags to riches, man. And so he came over one day, stayed at my house, and his slogan is, you know, John, get a little money, he loses his mind. But if you go back to what I said in the beginning, is that when I was at Apple, I had to walk to work. I didn't have a car. I didn't have anything. It was crazy because it was raining, pouring down raining. I remember I was walking, and I mean, I'm soaked at this point. And my boy and this girl, they driving down the street at the time, and they pull over and they say, hey, John, get in the car. I'm soaked at this point, you know, walking to work. So I walked 9 miles there, 9 miles back, going to work. Sometimes if I had money, I would take the bus back, whatever. All I was trying to do was really pay my child support. But I say that to say this. God doesn't make mistakes. God prepares you for the challenge of what you may face later on. So there's no lazy bone in my body. I got the recipe of success. And I took it to another level because I've been down this road once before. I've seen this before. And I know what it takes to make it at this magnitude. So when you talk about the John Kirkland story, you're talking about a young man who went from nothing, a young man who went to, who had holes in his jeans in the sixth grade. Mom worked 2 jobs, never home, suspended from school, breaking all the rules. You know, I had to make sure my sister gets to school on time, dressed, ready to go, otherwise you get your ass whooped. That's where I'm from. You know, my mother did the best she could, but shout out to my grandmother, you know, Charlene, raising me, taking care of me, never left me alone because she cared about me. And she taught me how to cook. She taught me how to be a leader, taught me that you got to be a professional at all times, no matter how much the situation makes you mad. Just taught me a lot. And, you know, she told me straight up, you get a girl pregnant, your life is over. Ain't gonna be no basketball, hanging out with your friends. You're gonna get your ass out there and you're gonna make something of yourself. And shout out to my grandmother for teaching me tough love at the same time. I remember one time my grandmother didn't have no money, barely could feed me, and it was crazy because she was like, I said, Grandma, I want these red and black patent leather Jordans. And I wanted them so bad. So I waited in line 6 in the morning. Actually, 3, like maybe 12 at night, 2 in the morning, whatever it was. And I was like, so my grandma gave me, I don't know, $250, $300 for the shoes, right? And I waited in line, caught a cold, waiting in line for the shoes. So I got home, I said, Grandma, I'm sick. She said, did you even get the shoes? I said, yeah, I got the shoes. And I showed her the shoes. And so I left the shoes on the coffee table and I laid on the couch. I went to sleep because I was trying to like heal. And when I put the shoes on, everybody at school was like, oh wow, John got the J's now. John's this. At the time, the same guy that didn't have any of that stuff. Now, it's crazy because I could buy that stuff all day long. But my grandmother couldn't do that because at the time she was like on a fixed income. So like my dream at that time was to be the best basketball player I could be so I could declare for the NBA draft so that my grandmother never had to work anymore. You know, she didn't have to take care of me no more. She didn't have to struggle no more. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I wanted to make sure my grandmother was comfortable. And it's no shade to my mother, you know, mistakes that my mother has made, but at the same time, I wanted to take care of those who took care of me. But my grandmother mainly would have gotten the biggest house, the best lifestyle, because my grandmother raised me, my grandmother scary. You know, shout out to my pops, A.D. Kirkland, for giving me the opportunity, taught me, you know, about how to win a championship. You know, if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be a title holder right now. So shout out to him, and shout out to his discipline also, because I still even use his discipline today in terms of, you know, being on time for work. And there were just certain things he gave me that allowed me to be, you know, the man that I am today. So shout out to my pops. But life is crazy. It's crazy. I just want to say this. A great man once told me, no matter what you go through, if you don't go through bad times, you don't know what good times are. And I really believe that, and I live on that. And it's crazy because I was just literally, even before I started this podcast this evening, I was talking to my chef. And nobody believes I got a personal chef, but I got a chef. Shout out to my boy Damon. But I got a chef, and I just reached out to him and said, hey man, you know, we got this pandemic going through 2021. It still should be a crazy mess, but 2022, let's go ahead and put something together. Let's make it happen for my birthday, my 37th birthday. Let's go ahead and do it in LA, and let's go ahead and just do it big. I'm going to ball out. Don't worry about it. Just be ready to cook. Just be ready to put your skills on, because it's like, you know, for him, I just wanted to put him on a platform where, you know, okay, he's networking and people can see his skills on the front line. You know, not just be about my birthday. So when I do something, it's not just about me. It's about my brothers also networking and putting themselves out there and being able to prove that, again, they're the best at what they do. Shout out to my boy Adrian Hart, man, for my tattoos, man. He's the best out west when it comes down to, you know, the tats and everything else like that. So, you know, all my brothers, everybody, they just do something different, and they're the best at what they do. So shout out to Age. But I talk about things like that in advance because, again, I plan to blow up within the next 11 to 10 months. And it's crazy because, like, I want my brothers to eat. I want them to celebrate with me. I want them to understand that it was hard work, dedication. I want them to have a front row seat and say, damn, if John's working hard enough to do it, I'm going to do it too, so to speak. So shout out to them. But my life. The funny thing to me, and it always amazes me about myself, is the adversity that I dealt with. Some of the low self-esteem issues that I had at one particular time. Maybe never being good enough, strong enough, dedicated enough. The thing for me is, you can't, ladies and gentlemen, you can't worry about what's on TV, what somebody else is doing, what somebody else has, what somebody else is driving. You can't worry about that. You got to pull out that pen and paper and say, what are my top five goals this year in 2021? What is going to make me rich if that's my dream? Pen and pad is the most original game plan you could ever have in your life. But what I want to say is this. Shout out to Sante again. He gave me the idea of talking about my life in certain aspects. And I know that I'm giving you guys different pieces of, in a chronological order, of what I've gone through and what I've dealt with and how I've overcame it. But here is the biggest adversity of all time. August 25th. I'll never forget it. Actually, the 24th. Sorry. The 24th, I was in my vehicle. And potentially, I've had way too much to drink. Potentially. That's what they say. Has there been proof? No. But that's what they say. One night, my cousin's friend came by, and I might have been under influence, didn't know it, because I was already kind of like set in my mode. And she said, "John, can you take me to my car?" I said, "Oh, no problem." So then my little cousin said, "John, after you take her to her car, can you take me to the store to get something to drink, like Powerade or soda or water, you know, because there was nothing in the house?" I said, "Oh, okay, cool, we can do it on the way back to the house." I didn't think nothing of it. So as I'm taking her home, as I'm taking her to her car, I drive back. So he says, "John, can we go by the store?" I said, "Well, where's the store at?" I said, "Show me where the store is." So he tries to show me where the store is. We're going through a intersection, and in a twinkling of an eye, I get busted. It's a Mercedes-Benz that hits me. And at that point in time, before the Mercedes-Benz hits me, I'm talking to my sister on Bluetooth. And when I got hit, I thought I was dead. I thought I was out. So probably for maybe 30 to a minute, I was out. I was done. And I heard my little cousin say, "Hey, let me out here. Let me out of here." Because mind you, my car was crushed in. So I kicked the door open. I got out the car. And I crawled on the sidewalk because I was so discombobulated. Mind you, I'm still thinking, how am I alive? This doesn't make any sense. So as the EMTs checked me out, the cops asked me all these questions. The first question they asked me was, "How much have you had to drink, John?" Because she said she could smell the alcohol in my breath. I said I had 2 beers and I left it at that. So as we proceeded to get checked out, as we proceeded to get into the medical ambulance, as we proceeded to get walk through the hospital, I tried to go to the bathroom, meaning I tried to go to the bathroom, put some water on my face so I could be coherent. She put her foot in the door so I wouldn't I wouldn't pee, which is a violation of my constitutional right. So as she continued to put her foot in the door, I said, "You know what? It's not even worth it." So I put water on my face. I left the bathroom. I got into the gurney and try to receive the medical attention. Only to find out that my blood was taken illegally without my consent. And I was released by the police department. I was never arrested. I was detained because they could not prove that I was under the influence of alcohol. So going forward, I lost my car. Now, I was in so much pain, I didn't have the use of my hands, I lost memory, it was just bad. I should be dead, but I thank the Lord every day that I'm here. The question was, who was at fault? And my response was, they were. Do I still believe they were? Sure. But here's the difference, ladies and gentlemen. I knew better too. And I allowed my ego to contradict my judgment. I didn't have to be in that situation, but I was there. And so being a man, being a leader, taking responsibility, saying, "You know what? It doesn't matter whose fault it was. I was involved. You take ownership and you correct it." And that's what I did. So anybody who says, has a few drinks and they say, "I can drive," don't do it. It's never worth it. Believe me, it's not. I'm just one of the lucky ones who was able to escape it without serious charges. But I encourage everybody, get an Uber, get a taxi, have somebody drive you, pick you up, whatever it takes. Drinking and driving is never the answer. And now I'm an advocate. But let me be clear. I'm not saying I was drinking and driving. I'm saying it was allegedly. What is my strength? What is my adversity? My adversity is, it's like the good book. Man gained the whole world and lost his soul. Well, that's what happened to me. I gained the money, car, everything. But I lost my soul in the midst of it. Meaning I went from sugar to you know what. So here's the thing. As I did that, I realized now I have to start all over again. Now I gotta grind hard, which is what I'm doing right now currently. I work two jobs. So I'm gonna fight and I'm gonna get back what I lost. But I'll be more appreciative this time around because I lost it. The question becomes, did I have to be there that night? No. For those of you who have relatives who've turned on you, that happened to me that same night. Money changes people and at times the situation. And the whole time you're sitting there, you're arguing with the people, your beloved ones, to say, hey, stay away from this person. This person's not good for you. Guess what? They end up burning you. The person burned me. But you talk about family. But I realize that I'm bigger than the blame or the cause. I realize that I represent change, dignity, and I represent what it means to be a successful black man in society. And that's how I channel my energy, through the disrespect and the turmoil and the social media slander that I have received within 2 weeks of the accident. Now, I take ownership of the part that I played, because we all play a part. But I'm a leader in the sense in that I say all the time, if I'm involved, it's my fault. You should know right from wrong. My journey means that I went from nothing to something. I went from losing my entire life, my entire existence, my money, my car, everything, to triumph. I went from being healed and completed to never defeated. And I feel like resilience is one of our greatest strengths and powers as young black men. Because it's not about losing, it's about bouncing back. Saying, hey, I'm not a loser. But understand, it may be your night tonight, but it won't be like that every night. And I felt that way when I came back and I approached life the way it was. So when I say I went from nothing to something, when I say I come from nothing, when I say where I come from or I'm about billions or whatever, it's not to like put myself on a platform or a platform where I'm bigger and better than everybody. It just means that I understand where I came from, I understand where I'm going, and I understand where I want to be. But at the same time, I also want to educate and elevate those who are confused and those that don't have it. A great man said, what's your why? Meaning, why do you do it? Why do you wake up? Why do you work? Why do you continue to take on a job that gives you bull crap? I say this. A man said to me one day, John, you old school. I'ma outwork you, man. You're not gonna have this job before. You're not gonna have this job too long. So you know what I told the young man? I said, I'm getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning. What time are you getting up? Work don't start till 7. I'm already up at 2:30, 3 o'clock. I'm already in the building at 5 a.m. What time are you getting there? My approach at that conversation has been the same approach it is right now. I'm hungry for success, and I live for the results. If you want it, you can get it. Great man once told me, it's not the skill of the man, it's the will of the man. And you have to have it. You have to want it. Some people, they worried about what's going on TV. Some people worried about their cell phone. Some people worried about this and that. Who said what? I don't care about that. A great woman once told me, I mind the business that pays me. So that's what I do. I mind the business that pays me. Here's a funny story. And ladies and gentlemen, this is part one of my journey. Part one. This is my closing statement for tonight and for part one. At one particular time, I used to watch Adrian Broner. I used to watch it. He became 3-time world champion, 3 different divisions at a very young age. I'm probably 22, 23 years old, 24 years old. And I love some of his entrances, intros, like when he came in. And when he talked about his lifestyle, like, I related so much to his lifestyle because, like, that was me at one particular time. And I also related to Floyd Mayweather in certain aspects also. But I never was a boxer. I never became boxing at all. This is just relating to their lifestyle. And so my friends will argue with me all the time. Man, come on, man. Quit talking to me about AB, man. AB is this and that. AB had a lot of my personality. Because, like, when you come from nothing and you got money and you're doing this, you're doing that, it becomes a powerful situation where, like, okay, you're in a strip club. You have this. You have that. Like, it's just when you go from being weak to powerful to having power and speed at the same time, it's crazy, because with that combo you can do anything. So when he came out with the thing about billions and rich gang, like, it really was a metaphor for me to believe in that. Okay, well, I can do the same thing these guys did. So when I talk about rich gang, it's just a state of mind. But at the same time, I just want to tell everybody, if you believe in your dream, if you believe that you can do it, this is not about anybody else. You can have anything you want. I was on a plane and I seen Little Ellerby in the front row. Funny story. And I wanted to sit next to Leonard Ellerby, so I did. And as the plane was getting ready to take off, I said, excuse me, Mr. Ellerby. My name is John Kirkland. I watch you all the time on your press conferences. I know you, you're being with the promotions. And out of the entire staff, besides Mayweather, I look up to you. I respect your professionalism and who you are when you're on the podium. Even though you get so much disrespect and you get so much criticism as far as being a part of and the CEO of being with promotions. And he said, thank you. I appreciate that. He said, I'm just baffled because a lot of people are Mayweather fans. They're not Leonard Ellerbe fans. So I'm astonished, but I appreciate it. And he said, John, if you don't mind me asking, what do you do for a living? I said, oh, I just got this job. I'm working at a parking company. And I said, I hope to be like Mayweather one day. I hope to be like Adrian one day, you know, where they're about billions and they're making money. He said to me, he said, John, I'm going to give you a secret. And he said to me, he said, John, if you save your money, just 25% of your money, out of everything you work hard for, you'll never go broke. I promise. And I thought at that moment in time, as we're flying into LA, I'm like, oh man, what? Like, all I gotta do is save, and that's the hardest thing we can do is save. So as I begin to save money, I begin to see my lifestyle change. So I went from raggedy sweats to top name brand jeans to Gucci watches to, you know, stunning shades to limousines to Dom Perignon to Cristal to all of that. And my boy Sante Holland, shout out to Sante, he would say, man, John get a little money, loses money. We go from penthouses to, we go from Motel 6s to penthouses. You know, we go from penthouses to villas. And the reality of it is this. I say this to say that to close this out. I've never been broke since then. I believe in my skills. I believe in who I am. I'm John Kirkland, the hardest man working. I'm not afraid to be wrong, but I'm honored to listen and learn. I'm never afraid to be stunned by growth, but I'm willing to learn maturity. Lessons are learned, fundamentals are taught. And I appreciate every concept of life that I've received. So for those out there that feel they're somebody's baby daddy and they're nothing and they're deadbeat, just remember, if you answer to that, that's who you are. But if you don't, and you say, you know what? What's my why? Who am I? What am I about? What's my game plan? What's my 5-year plan? Then you become a different person. Because you've outlined who you wanted to be. Shout out to, again, shout out to Sante Holland for this miracle idea in terms of me sharing my life. Part 2 coming next Wednesday. About my lifestyle, and we're going to get more in depth to everything, but I just wanted to share a piece of my life, share a piece of, you know, where I'm at, and anybody who's going through baby mama drama, whatever, just understand that when you go through it, never go through it to defeat the mama, go through it to be a better father for your child. That's what it's all about. It's rough, it's hard, it's tough. I know I've gone through it. My goal even now, and I go through the same thing I'm telling you guys to watch out for, is that, you know, I want a better relationship with my daughter at the end of the day. And I strive hard, I dedicate myself to that. Never let confidence to defeat your performance. Fake it until you make it. If that's what you gotta do. That's my time, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for tuning in to part 1 of the John Kirkland journey. Tune in next week, Wednesday night. We'll be right here, same time, same channel, on my lifestyle, on what I went through. Part 2 is going to be amazing. You don't want to miss it. Next Wednesday, tune in. and everyone have a great morning.